take a little look at home improvement today. That's the kind of music you like to hear when you're sitting out on your deck in the evening. At least that's what I'd like to hear. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. John Freiberger back with us today. And he's going to be talking about what you can do to make your deck safe, among other things. John is with Freiberger Construction Consulting. He's a registered home inspector. 4 decades of experience in the restoration of old homes. And we'll start with decks. You may be concerned about your deck. Maybe you're not. You may have some questions about maintaining it. And you may have some other home improvement questions as well. So I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And John Freiberger, welcome back.
Glad to be back with you, Larry.
I was on a deck once where I thought, you know, I don't know if my foot's going to go through here. You know, it was one of those decks at a cabin up in northern Wisconsin that hadn't been taken care of very much.
Yes, nice damp area under the trees and probably wasn't even treated wood.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Aside from that, what are some signs that your deck is, you know, up to snuff?
Well, there's a lot of signs, Larry, and decks, well, many of our listeners probably remember that we've had deck collapses, especially the really bad one in Chicago where 13 people were killed.
Yeah.
And we've had old decks collapse. We've had new decks collapse. I did a home inspection in April, and I noted that the deck steps and things were all structurally unserviceable. And 2 days later, the broker and the new buyer came back, and guess what? They tried going down the steps, and they went down really quick because the steps collapsed under them.
Oh,
now,
boy.
Fortunately, they were only 18 inches above the ground. But as we do home inspections, we see many, many, many decks that were built. You just can't figure out how badly they were built. Evidently, somebody hired an enemy to build a deck on their house.
Or they did it themselves.
They did it themselves. And what we're finding, I looked up some statistics from various city building inspectors and also from some of the companies that specialize in deck inspection. And Larry, that's become a whole new industry. Is there are certified deck inspectors now where you go to school and you get a certificate of deck inspection, and that's what you do, is you inspect decks. We've got 40 million decks in the U.S. that are more than 20 years old.
Ooh.
So that one you were up in northern Wisconsin was probably one of those 40 million. But, Larry, multiply that by 40 million, and you can think of the trouble that we can be in. And, of course, the other thing we see is litigation. Is we had a deck collapse during a wedding party, and everybody sued the homeowner.
They
said, well, the homeowner did it himself, and he should have known nails didn't work, and everybody ended up on the ground, and there were broken arms and broken legs. So there's a lot of reasons for us to inspect our deck, and fortunately, we're beginning to get some tools that the homeowner can use so you don't have to go out and hire somebody. There's actually a deck association, Larry, called the North American Deck and Railing Association. And if any of our listeners just Google them, they're gonna pop up real quickly for them. And they have a lot of articles and information. And they have developed something which you can download for free, and I'm pretty sure that the link is already on your Facebook page.
Yeah, we put it up there.
Great, and that is the NADRA deck evaluation checklist. So this is something that was sort of designed for building inspectors like myself. But there's no particular reason why a homeowner can't look at this. Now, there's a bunch of places on it where it says, well, if you see this problem, you better talk to a design professional. But still, it gives us a lot of the things to look at. When I took a look at the statistics on failures, we found two things that the homeowner should be most conscious of because that's where most of the failures occurred. One is the railings. Now, a railing in Wisconsin under the Uniform Dwelling Code has to take a 200-pound lateral force at any point on that railing, including right up at the top.
Okay.
So that means you or I leaning on that railing on the top real hard, it's got to withstand that and more. We have seen a lot of railing collapses, and I've been involved in multiple litigations where railings have collapsed and people have fallen and have been badly hurt. I was doing a home inspection in Madison one day, and I touched the railing, and it fell off. Oh, boy. And Larry, I mean touched. I didn't shake that. I touched it, and it fell off. So we need to check your railings. If it rattles, if it moves, if you bump it a little bit, and make sure, start with the rattling. Don't hold on to it in case it falls over. But apply a little bit of force to it, you know, starting very gently and then gradually. If that railing is moving, you've got a problem. If you can get under your deck, and most decks are fairly elevated, so you can get under, see how the posts of that railing are attached. If they are screwed into the deck boards, you've got trouble. The railing has to have what's called a shear connection. That is, it has to have something that will hold it from fastener failure. So it can't be nailed into the side. It can't be screwed with lag bolts into the side. It can't be screwed or nailed to the decking. It needs to have a pair of bolts run through it, all the way through it, connecting it with the outside ring joist, so that can really withstand that force. Now, of course, if that wood is old and rotten and has cracks all over, well, the wood may fail before the fasteners. The second area that we find most big collapses happen from is the deck detaches itself from the house. And the problem there is that in some cases, the deck is nailed against the house and nails pull out.
Yeah.
In some cases, it's lag bolted against the house. And lag bolts, over time, although they've got great strength when they're brand new, over time we have problems. The other big problem we have with houses is people don't flash their decks. So the water gets down there between the ledger board of the deck, and you end up with wood decay.
Yeah.
And we have house after house where we are finding wood decay. Some of these were flashed, but they were flashed with aluminum. So we take aluminum, then we put a corrosive treated wood against them, and in a few years that aluminum is full of holes. So those are a couple of things to start with when you download your deck evaluation checklist.
What if you're doing a new one? What do you think of this, the composites or the new kinds of decking material that are out there?
I think we're finally getting some that are right. I inspected a deck last week that's 9 years old, and it's total trash. Oh. It didn't last as long as wood, but it was installed wrong. But some of the new products, the ones that I really like, Larry, are the ones that are made out of PVC. Now, PVC is the same stuff that the sewer pipes are made out of.
Yeah.
So it can be buried. It's never going to rot. And there's a company called AZEK, amongst others, that make deck boards that are through color. Now, a lot of the old composites, there was a PVC or some sort of plastic wrap on it. But if you scratch through it, you ended up with this sort of chip core, and it was exposed and looked funny. So, well, the newer products seem to be through color. So if you get some damage to it, you're not losing the color. So we're certainly ending up with much better products. Now, the important thing, as we say on every program, is if you buy that product or you have the contractor install it, download the installation instructions, because deck boards are never supposed to be tight together.
Oh, they aren't.
Oh, no, no. Well, if you think of wood, Larry, wood is the worst, and wood composites are next. If we end up with that water sitting in that like little trench between the wood, we're going to end up with a lot of movement. And this is one reason why this composite deck that I looked at last week failed, is it was dead tight. So then it gets very wet. And you, in almost everything except for PVC, you've got some sort of fibers that can take in water. Certainly we know wood fiber does, and then you get movement. So it's very important to read the installation instructions. And there's some really neat ways of installing decks now, too, with hidden fasteners. So you get these PVC parts that have a little groove in the side. You set it down. You put in a fastener. You put it in with a screw. You slide the next one to it. And if you ever need to replace a board, you take your screw gun, unscrew a few screws in that gap, lift it up, put new ones in, and redo the fasteners. So we're ending up with some really good quality products that are finally coming out. And it's really been the last decade that we're getting away from the old cedar, redwood, treated wood decks.
So the one thing that you didn't mention was footings, and I was thinking about that place up that cabin in northern Wisconsin. I don't think there was any footings in that one, because it was kind of leaning and it was rickety, let's put it that way.
Now that's a real good point, Larry, and there's a little problem with the deck evaluation checklist on the second page, because it talks about is it at least 12 inches below undisturbed ground? Well, we're in Wisconsin, yeah. And our frost goes deep. So in Wisconsin, we really want to have a 48-inch deep footing.
Yeah.
And we want to have a minimum of a 12. Now, you can buy these precast little footers you can drop down in there. And they need to be at least 12-inch by 12-inch. But you're better off having your contractor actually calculate the footing size, because depending upon the size of the deck, you may need a larger footing. This becomes really important. Well, let's say your northern Wisconsin cabin deck was nice and strong, was attached to the house, and the frost got underneath it and lifted it up. Well, that's going to pry on that house. The house is going nowhere, is it?
No.
And so what that's going to do, that's going to loosen those nails or the lag bolts that have connected that deck to the house. So the next spring, it settles back down again when the frost leaves, but now we've loosened up the nails.
Yeah.
So you're right, Larry. Having a good footing is extremely important.
Well, let's go to Tim in Appleton, who has a question. Tim, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a composite deck, L-shaped, that is around the corner of my house. The outside edges have settled. I did not install the deck. Just bought the house a year ago. But the outside edges have settled. Not a lot, inch and a half. But I'd like to shim that up or whatever I have to do to level that back out. Any thoughts?
Tim, how old is your house?
The house is about 20 years old.
About 20 years old. Okay, so we've had some subsidence. Now,
I don't think the deck is that old, though. I'm guessing the deck is only a matter of 4 or 5 years old.
I see. Okay. I think the first thing you better do is a little bit of shovel work. And you need to find out, as Larry was pointing out, whether you've got frost depth footings below here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the problems we have on houses, especially those built into hillsides, is often we have shallow footings, and they're really on soil that isn't very well compacted. Usually, if we do go down 4 feet, not only do you get frost protection, but we also get down to better soil. The other problem is your footings may simply be too small for the load on your deck.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can't tell you on the air how to calculate that. But basically, you have what's called a tributary area. You've got a part of your deck that loads on a particular footing, and you have to calculate those loads. And your deck is supposed to be designed for 40 pounds per square foot live load. And plus, most decks weigh between 10 and 15 pounds dead load, all the materials. So you're looking at 55 pounds per square foot. So if you've got 200 square feet of deck that is maybe coming down on one particular area, and you've got the 55 pounds per square foot, well, you've got a lot of weight coming down on that footing. And if it's only a 1 foot square footing on 3,000 pound soil, that corner would only support 3,000 pounds.
Sure.
So I think you're going to have to try to determine what you have. Mm-hmm. If it's undersized, it's going to keep moving. Now, there's some really neat fixes out there. Again, new technology. Helical piles are just wonderful. Guy comes
what
in.
What are they? What happens? The guy comes in.
It's a giant screw, Larry. That's a giant screw that you put in with a bobcat. And you basically, we screw these things into the ground. What they are able to support is absolutely astonishing. And we've had, the biggest one we did was a 48-foot tall chimney that was leaning towards the neighbors, and we put helical piles on the outside because they didn't have a good foundation and pushed the thing back up and supported it. But a lot of the local contractors are now using helical piles because you can use them as footings for decks. You screw them into the ground, and they make a nice, solid footing for you. So if they're really undersized, you're probably looking at doing a temporary shoring on the deck, maybe pulling the piers out so you can get underneath it, doing a bunch of excavating, getting something the right size, pouring a concrete footing, or putting in a helical pile. And that's sort of, it's time, at that point, it's sort of time to talk to the contractors in the Appleton area and see who does a good job and is familiar with this sort of technology.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Sure.
I will check out the base, what did you call them?
The footings?
The footings.
Mm-hmm.
And let's assume that they are at 48 inches. The deck is pretty well built, let's assume that they didn't have the ground compacted or didn't set it on a precast piece of stone or whatever, and it simply settled. Is there a way to shim a composite deck, or would I have to somehow take those footings out and redo them?
If there's concrete that comes up to the ground, then there's ways of doing it because you can use metal connectors. And you can go online to the Simpson Company and take a look at the metal connectors. The problem when we shim things is we introduce a hinge joint. And both for lateral stability and straight downward load, we can have a problem. But if it's down an inch, there may be something in Simpson that you can mount with a shim that is still going to give you the lateral support that you need.
All right. Good enough. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call, Tim. John Freiberger of Freiberger Construction Consulting of Fitchburg, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Michelle Johnson, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 2 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn and her guests look at recent crackdowns against the press and if they're legal. That's at 2 o'clock on the Ideas Network. Now we're taking a look at home improvement and zeroed in a little on decks, but we'll take other questions as well. Call in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post, maybe you can post a deck photo or other photo on our Facebook page. You can post a question there as well. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. Let's go to Kim in Eau Claire next. Kim, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you. We built a new house in 2013, and we've got about 800 square feet of deck that wrap around our house. We went one full season with this treated deck without putting anything on it. We were busy with other things on the house. So in 2015, we bought a really good quality stain from one of the big box stores, and we sprayed the whole deck so that we would get all the nooks and crannies rather than trying to brush it or roll it. Since then, that deck has begun to peel something terrible. It's almost a bare deck again, and it just looks hideous. I don't want to just put fresh stain on top of it again. I'm wondering if there was something we didn't do to prepare it or something we should do to further prepare it before we restain it.
Yeah. Treated wood is such a problem. Part of the reason is, as we were noting earlier, is the problems with corrosion. Is when we use treated wood for decks, there's special fasteners that we have to use because the older deck had copper arsenate. There's five different treatments now because they had to get rid of the arsenic and the copper arsenate. But the products that are used to treat the wood decks are simply highly corrosive. And my guess is that they keep coming out of the wood over the years because at some point the stuff rots, and only rots because the treatment is gone. So you may have some sort of chemical reaction going on. The other problem with treated wood is that we apply the treatment under pressure with a lot of water. And the wood has a tendency to change in dimension, and usually it's a fairly inexpensive southern pine that we're using. You know, we're not treating redwood because we don't have to. So we end up with a wood that micro cracks a lot. Very, very difficult to work with. One thing that I've heard from painters is that if you only spray and don't brush, you don't get good adhesion. The painters that I know say that they will spray, but then they will brush it to make sure that they are getting as much grip surface as they can, and they're getting down into the large cracks as well as the micro cracks. So I'm afraid you're in a situation where you're probably going to be painting and repainting every couple of years. I don't know of any magic bullet. You can certainly go online and talk to some of the paint manufacturers, you know, Sherwin-Williams, some of the better quality ones, see if they have some products that are better on treated wood than others. I do not recall ever seeing anything where the paint company said, this works better on treated wood than anything else, but that doesn't mean it's not out there.
Yeah. All right. And, you know, with installing, let's say you're putting in a wood deck, probably a good idea to do the painting and staining so you can get all sides of the material before you put it down so the underside is also covered.
That's correct, Larry. What we usually suggest is people not paint, but they use a preservative on it instead.
Yeah.
And usually you can order that with the preservative applied through a pre-finisher. And some of the pre-finishers will give you some very nice warranties on that. Now, the deck, if you're using a cedar or something, will eventually gray out, but it'll gray out more slowly with the preservative on it.
Hmm, there we go. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Kim. Let's go to Jeff in Grand Marsh next. Hi, Jeff. Thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. Here's an idea that I'm pondering. I've got a bunch of galvanized pipe, and I'm thinking of cutting a hole in my garage floor, burying it, this stuff down about 4 or 5 feet, and digging it into the ground, and then bringing it up on the other side of the garage, and then using a box fan. And I have a nice cool air during the summer and relatively warm air during a zero-degree day in the winter. Can you think of any problems I might have with that system?
Well, it's going to rust.
It's galvanized.
It's going to rust. Even if it's G60 galvanized, it's going to rust. In fact, I'm willing to give you a written guarantee on that.
Right.
Because it does rust. It sounds like what you're doing is you're sort of doing an extremely shallow geothermal heat exchange.
Correct.
Why are we putting it under the garage where it is so difficult? And then we're cutting the garage floor, and then we're going to have some hard-to-compact fill in the garage floor, and then the garage floor is going to move. If we want to do something like this, why aren't we looking at something that's solar-oriented or doing it in the yard?
Well, it would be in the yard, but just for people that are listening, I would have two roughly 2-foot square holes in my garage floor, one end, but the holes would actually be dug out into the yard. And I have the equipment to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the galvanized pipe is something I picked up pretty darn cheap. I have the equipment to dig the hole. I would be looking at maybe a day of my time, 2 days of my time. Let's throw in $500 for incidentals I'm not thinking of. On the surface, it looks pretty cheap, but I may not be thinking of something.
Well, the question is, how many BTUs are you going to get, and is it going to be worth the trouble?
Yeah.
And that's, you're into an area of analysis where if we had my partner here, he'd be able to figure all that out since he got a master's degree in it. But you're beyond my pay grade here. It sounds like you're looking at a homemade, geothermal transfer unit, but there are calculations, and you maybe want to talk to somebody. You may be able to talk to even a heating contractor, because it's amazing how much heating contractors now know about thermal transfer.
Yeah,
so call a couple guys in your area and see if it's worth the trouble.
I put in geothermal for the house, and I mean we went there. I've got 4 180-foot deep holes. In the now it's underneath the driveway, but it went. They had to go down a long ways
to get real heat transfer.
Yeah, you
really do. We've done a couple here in Madison that the wells have been very, very substantial, a couple of 100 feet deep, and each one of those deep tubes I think is good for only 30,000 BTUs. Which is not a lot.
Not a lot.
So I guess the concern that I've got with Jeff is he may have a whole lot of work that he does, and then we end up with some rusted pipe and
and not very much heat transfer.
And not much very much heat transfer, right?
Yeah, there we go. Thanks for calling, Jeff. Appreciate your call. We have Dale next from Chippewa Falls. Hi, Dale. Thank you for calling.
Hi, guys. Good program. Enjoyed it as always. Hey, just I got a question, but first a little follow up to the guy who had problems with his treated deck being stained.
Yeah.
And I'm not a professional, but I took the advice of a friend who is when I did mine. And the first thing he told me, don't do anything with it for a minimum of 1 year. Just leave it. And I actually didn't stain mine for a couple of years. And then when I did stain it, I did use a high-quality stain. And the other thing he told me, I don't care if it says you can spray it, don't spray it, brush it on. And I did. And you can even feel it kind of when you're doing it. You know what I mean? You're brushing it. You can almost feel that. I used a really good quality semi-transparent stain, and it sucked in. And I do mine about every third year, and it just looks great, and it's lasted. So just follow up. If he sprayed it and he sprayed it too soon, it definitely doesn't work. But having said that, just bought a cabin up north, and that one had a deck that is treated. It's about 16, 17 years old, and they never did stain it. And I don't want to stain it just because I want this cabin I don't want to have to go up there and work on it. I want to enjoy it. So my question is, and your guest said something about this, how long can I expect treated wood to last if you never do apply anything to it? And right now the deck is very solid. The boards all feel good. It did have some kind of green, not really mildew, but just green from the pine trees and everything, and I power washed it all. It looks great. I mean, will treated wood, and it's all nice and aired and above ground, it's got air underneath it all, is there an expectation without staining it or doing anything on how long it should last, just roughly?
If we knew the type of treatment. Now, the 16 years ago, as there is today, there's basically five levels of wood treatment. Only one of them is for ground or soil contact. So there's a special treatment if you're putting in fence posts or something like that, or if you're putting deck piers down into the ground. But there's four levels of treatment, and the problem is often, especially at the big box stores, you don't know what you're buying. You're buying treated wood, but how treated was it? Now, if yours has lasted that long and has a little bit of green plant growth on it and doesn't look terrible, maybe it was pretty good quality and maybe it was from the local lumber yard because you didn't have a big box up there. The imponderable is we don't know what tag was on the end of those boards when they were delivered from the lumber yard that would have told us what the treatment level was. But basically, it sounds like so far so good. If the air drying certainly accounts for a lot. When we get overhanging trees on the north side, we see things go to pieces quickly. But if you've got some sunshine shining on it and it's not a particularly wet microclimate, you're not right down next to the lake, maybe you're going to go 40 years. Okay. In the old days, the 16, 17 years ago, to my recollection, the best thing we could possibly get was the ground contact and that it was good for 40 years.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I suspect this one was from a lumber yard because the previous owner had it done by a contractor, I know there is not a big box store in this area, so that's good. But it's held up very well, so I was just wondering, what can I expect? So, all right.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. I was just thinking about my own deck that I had. This was about 10, 12 years ago on my lake home. And I always had, I took it off and put a patio in because I had raccoons and everything else wanting to live underneath it. And so I just got rid of my deck and made a patio.
Larry, that's advice that I give to so many homeowners where they've got a deck 18 inches above ground on the north side of the house. And we look at that old deck and we go, pavers are really nice.
Yeah. And it was really nice, and I loved that patio. It was wonderful once we got that in, and the raccoons went away. There we go. Tony in Madison, your turn. Hi, Tony.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a question on bridging between the joists on decks. I don't see that commonly done on decks. It's commonly done in houses, and I think that would add substantial strength. And the second question was this new brown-colored treated lumber out there. What do you think of it?
I don't know anything about the brown treated lumber. I guess what you'd have to do is take a look at the tag, check with the manufacturer, and see what it is certified, what the product is. I think there are at least eight different treatment processes right now. I think there's at least eight of them that are listed in the Uniform Dwelling Code. And frankly, I don't know what all of them mean. I would have to, if I'm ordering wood, I would actually talk to the lumber yard and tell them what I need and then have them tell me which specification we need to follow. Now, as far as bridging, Bridging.
What is bridging?
Oh, bridging is basically, well, if you had an old house, Larry, you would notice in the basement, if you had long spans, that you would have probably 1x3s, nominal 1x3s, nailed in between the floor joists in an X pattern, one next to the other.
Okay.
And basically what we're doing is we are enhancing three-dimensional load transfer, which is a long word for we're spreading the weight out from one joist to the joist next to it. The other thing we're doing is we're preventing tipping. And if I looked in the code book, I think I would find that on certain, if you're doing a 2x10, 2x12 joist over a certain distance, you do have to put bridging in because it gives it that lateral stability. So when we look at things in the code, we're usually doing a two-dimensional analysis. So we're looking at each joist, and we're saying, here's what it's good for. But we know when we stand on the floor that our weight is going out in a circle around us. It's going out in three dimensions. So the bridging does add some three-dimensional strength. But if you need to meet code, that's not what you use unless you're an engineer. If you're an engineer, you can do it. Otherwise, you need to use the span tables in the code to meet the criteria that the Uniform Dwelling Code sets out for your deck to be safe.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling. And let's see, we had a question from an email, I believe. This one is from a power chair user. Disabled people, various weights in the power chairs, 300 to 400 pounds when you sort of add everything up. They present a challenge when it comes to decks.
Indeed, they do. The other thing that really presents a challenge, Larry, is hot tubs.
Yeah?
You see people putting hot tubs out on decks, and it's like, good grief. Let's get four people and 150 gallons of water in there, and how much weight do we have? Well, as we said earlier, the average live load, and a chair would be part of the live load because you remove it, is 40 pounds per square foot. So if you do a three-dimensional analysis, it depends upon your deck. It's probably going to be okay. But if you are putting something heavy out on the deck, you really need to talk to a contractor, a lumber yard that can do structural calculations, or to a structural engineer that can do the calculations.
Yeah.
It's better safe than sorry.
Yeah.
The problem, we don't want to design over the air because we just can't see it. Where something is placed makes a difference. Things that are placed in the middle of the deck cause more deflection and movement than things that are put at the edge of the deck. If it's put at the edge of the deck, well, how are those fasteners going into the house? Are they in good shape or are they not in good shape? So there's a lot of things to think about.
Yeah. Let's go to Ruth then in La Crosse. Ruth, hello. Thank you for calling. Ruth, Ron, not Ruth. Ron. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, I got a question. I heard once that if you want to paint masonry, like brick or cinder block, you should paint normally doesn't last on it. It would peel. But I've heard that if you pre-apply some vinegar on it and then paint it, the paint will last indefinitely. My question is, would you apply the paint while the vinegar is still fresh and, the cinder block is still moist from the vinegar, or do you wait till the vinegar is dry to paint?
We want to save the vinegar for a salad.
Pardon?
The problem with vinegar is it's a mild acid. So what they're doing when they're putting vinegar on something is they're etching it. Well, do we really want to etch mortar, especially if it's older lime mortar with brick? Are we going to be destroying some of the surface of that mortar so that after the vinegar evaporates, that the mortar is actually looser and has a powdery film on the top and the paint's more likely to fail? So I think that we don't want to do this. I think what we want to do is, you're in a good sized city, and I'm sure you've got Sherwin Williams, Pratt and Lambert, Pittsburgh. You've got a couple of paint stores there, and you're going to find that almost all of these larger paint manufacturers have a masonry specific paint, something that has special bonding agents and things to make that adhere. So I would go down, not to a big box, but go to a local store, a paint specialist, and talk to somebody and say, and take along a picture. Here's the brick I want to paint. Here's the concrete block I want to paint. What should I use on this? And they'll spend some time with you, and they'll talk to you about it. Now, there are bonding agents and other things that you can use in difficult situations, but you're probably not in a difficult situation. But let's go get some professional help, and let's avoid the vinegar, because applying acid to, you know, applying acid to a building surface, I think, is generally something that's not going to be particularly useful.
There we go. Thank you so much for calling. On to Don in Colgate. Don, hello. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have a deck that I had built about 35 years ago of cedar, and it's deteriorating, of course. And I've been trying to find a contractor in the southeast Wisconsin area to give me bids on it, and I'm having trouble finding people. Could you recommend an association I may contact, or you know, if
sure.
You know, how would I get a hold of good contractors in the area? I got two bids, yeah. One of $7,800 and a second bid of $49,700. So I'm a little bit confused at this point.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
I tell you, Don, the problem in Wisconsin right now is we have such a shortage of skilled person power in the construction industry. So many people, the people who are my age, all quit during the recession because there wasn't any work. And now what we have is we've got a few younger and middle-aged guys who know what they're doing and a whole bunch of people who recently bought a hammer and decided they're contractors. It's really difficult. The people that I know that I'm trying to call for my clients, I know, are basically booked into the fall at this point. There are local associations. There's the Wisconsin Association of Home Builders, but they're home builders. That's a little bit different. Now, there is the National Association of the Remodeling Industry, NARI, N-A-R-I. I think it's just nari.org. I think what you can do is you can look up NARI members in your neighborhood. And as in most things, the guys that spend the extra money to join the professional associations are usually the guys who have a little skin in the game. They're going to be a little bit more conscientious. They're in it for the long haul. So why don't you start with NARI? I'm hoping that that'll work. I'm afraid you're in a part of the state where I simply don't know anyone. But give it a shot there and see if you can find somebody who can still do this work for you this year. The nice thing about deck work is actually you can do it in the winter, especially if you're using these products that Larry and I were talking about earlier, is these the AZEK and these other already through color boards that you don't need to paint or stain.
Well, I was told that AZEK is very good. I've talked to people about AZEK, but the cost involved is really phenomenal. They said it might quadruple the cost of the repairs. Is that true?
That is possible. And you also have to try to stay away from, I wouldn't use 16-foot long pieces because it does move, especially in the sunlight. But if you take a look at how many times you're going to paint that deck in the next 40 years and the board replacements and the other things, well, is it more expensive? What's a weekend fishing worth? I know Larry and I can give you an answer to that. That's why we have AZEK.
Okay. But I went fishing last weekend and didn't catch anything.
Well.
I'll have to figure in that calculation too then now. Thanks a lot for your help.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. John Freiberger of Freiberger Construction Consulting of Fitchburg, Wisconsin. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller. Here on the Ideas Network. So happy you're with us here on the Ideas Network as we take a look at home improvement with John Freiberger of Freiberger Construction Consulting of Fitchburg. You can join in an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post. Maybe you've got a photo of something you want us to take a look at, or maybe just a question you want to post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show, and we can handle that for you. And let's go to Dan in River Falls next. Dan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just joined the show at 11:30 or so, so I just first time I heard about the AZEK, so maybe that's my answer. But I've got a 25-year-old deck on the second floor. It's in the shape of like a half a stop sign, maybe 15 feet long and out to about 8 feet wide. And it's going on 25 years old, and the railing and some spindles need to be replaced. And I've given up on it. It came painted, and we bought the house. It was painted, And so we just kind of let the paint go, and we're scraping as it goes. And the decking itself is holding up well. It's treated lumber. So I'm wondering, what do I do about the replacement? Use more treated stuff? Should I do this AZEK? And then one last thing is I've read that because it's treated lumber, a professional is supposed to remove the paint on it due to, I think it's arsenic or something, carcinogen that's in the wood. I'll leave it at that and you go from there, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, if it is 25-year-old, it does probably have copper arsenate in it. The question is how much copper arsenate is left. I would expect that the half-life of the copper arsenate treatment is probably long gone, and the remaining chemical in it may be fairly low at this point. Now, you cannot burn. You have to handle treated lumber as waste. That is, you cannot burn it in your backyard because the ash that comes out of it does have the copper arsenate in. I've not heard of an issue with paint, that the paint would have so much arsenate in it that it would be a problem. But I haven't heard anything one way or the other on that, so I don't want to advise you on that.
Okay.
As far as the material that you use, there's a lot of things out there, both for railings as well as for deck. There are the PVCs, and AZEK is one I tend to be real familiar with. There's a lot of other good products there, too. I don't want to steer everybody to AZEK. I don't know if you have an ABC supply in your area. I know they're over the southern part of the state, but they usually have a specialist for windows, and they also usually have a specialist for decks because there are so many materials out there now, including some really good railing systems that are going to last much longer with wood, including railing systems you can see through that are made of plexiglass or made of cables. So there's an awful lot of stuff out there. What you want to do is a lot of what you're thinking about, I think, in your house are probably aesthetic choices. You know, do you want to be able to look out the door there on the second floor and watch the deer in the backyard? Well, then you don't want a solid wood railing. Is the railing sort of get wet all the time? Well, then maybe you want one of these railings that are made out of the vinyls or the PVCs. Or maybe you want it in cable, or maybe you want it clear. If you do some Googling on deck and railing, you're going to find just a plethora of choices that you can find. Or if you can go to a good specialty wholesaler, and ABC is the one I usually look at here in town, though there's others as well, you're going to find that there's an awful lot of choices out there. But as we always say on the program, after you research those choices, download the installation instructions. If you have a contractor, do it. Hand them a copy and keep a copy. Or if you do it yourself, follow them religiously. So the choice is really up to you. A lot better products now than there were 25 years ago, so you can really improve this deck.
Yeah, there we go. I used, on an indoor railing at our lake home, we used a cable so we could see out on the lake, and it looked great.
Mm-hmm. And high tensile steel every 4 inches, and yeah, usually with the ability to tension it as you need.
Yeah.
And you know, with that railing, you really have to have good uprights. You have to have really good quality posts to hold that in place.
Yeah.
Because that is applying that 200-pound load all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Dan. Let's go to Karen in Milwaukee next. Hi, Karen. Thank you for calling.
Hey. We have a cedar-sided house that is about 25 years old, and it's in need of painting. However, we do live in a woods, and there is a mold that's growing on the outside. About 3 years ago, we power washed the whole house and bleached some areas, and it looked good. But now, we did not paint it at that time. Now it's back with a vengeance and seems to be spreading everywhere.
Oh,
so
dear.
My question is, I feel like we need professional help. Do we hire a painter? Do they have processes? I don't think just power washing is going to help.
Mm-hmm.
Or do we need a mold company? Or what do we do to stop this?
Yeah, we don't want a mold company. You can't afford that. now, Karen, what kind of finish is on the siding? Is there a stain?
It's a solid color stain.
Solid colored stain. Okay. I don't know if you can get this online, but you might. But Preservation Magazine, I think 2 months ago, had a nice article about moving a Frank Lloyd Wright house. And it was in a woods, and it had the cypress siding that Frank Lloyd Wright loved.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically black. And they did a whole bunch of research and a whole bunch of tests, and in the article it tells you what they used.
Okay.
And I think actually one of the product that they use as the final coat is actually made in Milwaukee, though I can't remember the exact name of it. So see if you, maybe search online, do Preservation Magazine, Frank Lloyd Wright, Cypress Siding Restoration.
Okay.
And maybe that article will pop up, or you can go to your local library and maybe they get Restoration Magazine. Now, this is the National Trust for Historic Restoration publication, so they're a nonprofit. But it was a nice little article, and I actually saved it in case somebody emails me at home so I can tell them.
Okay.
I think that basically you're going to work with a painting contractor because the problem you have is extremely common.
It is.
And they are probably going to have some suggestions. You can do a little research yourself. But this, I don't think we're looking at a toxic mold or something where we're doing remediation. This is not inside your house. You're not breathing the air that's coming off that wall. So I think a good quality painter, and there should be quite a few in the Milwaukee area, and some of them may advertise that they're restoration specialists. Again, I have not gone to NARI website for a while, but you might go to National Association Remodeling Industry and just click on that and then click on painters and see if they have somebody in the Milwaukee area that has a specialization in what you're looking for, and you may indeed find that.
Okay. All right. Perfect. And not the mold companies.
Not the mold company. I hate to tell you how much they would charge you.
Okay.
Good luck. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Karen. Jeff in Greendale, it's your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Good morning. Say, I just put in a stone path in my backyard, a Lannan stone path, garden path. It looks really nice. And a neighbor told me that as opposed to putting dirt in between the stones, maybe if I wanted to put moss or grass, that I could, there's a silica, some type of silicate sand or something I could put in between to help stabilize the stones. What are your thoughts on that?
There's a whole bunch of things you can use now. The most common one that is out there is probably just simply lime fines or lime screening, it's often called.
Okay.
Basically, it's sort of like, you know, clumpy lime sand. You put it in, you sort of tamp it a little bit with whatever you can tamp it with. It gets hard as concrete. And the nice thing about it is you can replace it as needed. There are also all kinds of nice little granular things. A friend of mine put in a patio, and she's got these little tiny black sand pebbles between all of her pink stones that look really neat.
Oh, okay.
So I would probably check. You're in Greendale, so you've got a bunch of really good quality landscape contractors near you that are probably going to have some, you're going to have a couple of showrooms. I'd go over there and take a look at it. But the default setting is that sand is just fine.
Mm-hmm.
It has a tendency to wash out. The lime fines will last a few years, and then you've got to replace some of it. The nice thing about lime fines is it doesn't grow moss on it. Now, if you want moss to grow, well, then you don't want to use lime fines because then we're going to have a base filler. You'd want, if you want moss to grow, you need a somewhat acidic filler. But then again, you're using Lannan stone, which doesn't like acids.
Ah, okay.
So I think maybe a stop in at a garden center, which is fun anyway. And talk to one of their designers.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
That's
good luck.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks for calling, Dave in La Crosse. Did we have Dave in La Crosse already?
We didn't.
Did we? Dave. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a really low deck, about 18 inches off the ground, and I need to keep water from running through it and seeping into my basement walls.
Mm-hmm.
I just wondered if you could suggest some materials for doing that. I tried outdoor rugs and plywood, and they both painted plywood both decompose in a couple of years.
Yep.
And I've seen some fiberglass panels, 4x8s. I don't know if those would be suitable or wouldn't hurt the deck and...
Yeah,
could be walked on.
The easiest thing to do, Dave, I'm hoping that your deck was installed with screws instead of with nails. Do you know that?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think what you do is you get your screw gun out and you unscrew a bunch of boards.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the nice thing about gravel is it's really cheap. They'll dump it in your driveway. And if you buy one of those 1 foot square tampers at the hardware store and you tamp it, that gravel is basically about as permeable as your concrete driveway. And you can shape that so it drains off whatever direction you want. Then you put some plastic visqueen over the top of it and maybe some washed stone. and you should, your water is going to be away. It's going to be drier underneath there because the water is going to shed and your deck's going to last longer. And you should not have to touch that for the life of your deck.
Okay, so tamp down some gravel, and then what was the next layer, did you say?
Well, I would probably put a layer of plastic visqueen on it, though you could use landscape fabric, because I'd like to put some washed stone or something under there as well so that you can take the leaf blower and blow stuff out of there. It discourages the chipmunks from digging as well if you've got the washed stone. But yeah, I am really lazy. I like solutions where once it's done, I don't have to look at it for 20 years.
Yeah, I
think that would be a good one.
You think it's necessary to get under the deck to do that, though? Nothing you can put over the deck?
No. There's things you can put over the deck. You can unscrew the deck boards and put in these panels, but then what's going to happen is somebody's going to eat one, or one's going to crack, or they're going to leak near the edge, or they're going to fill up with debris and then drain back towards the house and make your basement wet. So I always think that the simplest is the absolute best. So let's try the gravel.
All right. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. John Freiberger of Freiberger Construction Consulting of Fitchburg, our guest. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, then we'll be back. Stay with us. Glad to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here and visiting with John Freiberger of Freiberger Construction Consulting. Always great to have John come by. And today we've talked a lot about decks, but we'll take other questions as well relating to home improvement. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And you know what? We'll turn right back to the phones and go to Gene in Sun Prairie. Gene, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have another mold question. However, ours is in the attic. We had a skylight that had leaked before we bought the house, and then we had it re-caulked and found out there had been tar up there. And then also a vent that from the bathroom nearby that was changed, and there's a big 16 diameter ring of black mold, circle black mold, and another area about between joists, 8 inches wide, and then disappears down into the blown in insulation.
Okay.
I'm not sure how much mold. That's only a small area that we can see in the attic. I haven't been up to investigate the rest. So what do you recommend for interior mold?
Joan, let me ask you a quick question. How old is your house?
About 29 years.
Okay. And do you have soffit vents as well as roof vents? That is, vents in the overhang of the house?
Yes.
Are they continuous?
I believe so.
Okay. If they're continuous and then you have an insulation dam and a chute in the attic between each rafter or truss space, that's good. But then you shouldn't have gotten this mold.
Yeah.
Because you should have had enough air change that even though you may have had a bathroom fan or something blowing up there, that should have evacuated the moisture. So you may want to just inspect your attic or have a knowledgeable insulation person or energy consultant inspect your attic. Basically, I'm trying to remember the EPA standard on mold, but I think basically if it's bigger than 3 square feet, they say have a professional take a look at it.
Okay.
Usually what we have when we do home inspections and we find non-green plant growth, you know, we don't know whether it's mold or mildew or mushrooms or what it is up in the attic. But if it's, we always do call it out. So the home inspection industry and I think the real estate industry and consider it to be an adverse element and it needs to be taken care of. If you call remediation specialists, you will find a 500% difference in prices. It is absolutely astonishing what some people charge to do a little bit of mold cleanup. So I would check very carefully when you talk to people who come up and do the remediation. So you want to make sure that you've got the skylight flashing taken care of and that we've got an insulated and airtight duct on this bathroom fan so we don't get more air in the attic. And then get it cleaned up. And they will probably do a wipe down and they may very well spray a white sealer over it as well.
Okay.
So I think it's worth making a little investment in that.
Yeah, our Focus on Energy company did some of that work with changing that vent, so maybe get back to them on it.
Yeah.
Anyone on a 29-year-old house, you know, Larry, technology, you know, building science just barely existed as a discipline 29 years ago. It's amazing. We were ignorant as dirt. We built houses the way our grandfathers built houses till the 70s, and in the 70s we put in was wood and chip core and all kinds of things, and we really ended up with problems. And then in the 80s and 90s we started studying it. And it's amazing what we know now as far as how to retrofit a 30-year-old house. And I generally suggest to anyone with an older house, is I really think next winter they should have one energy analyst come in, do a blower door test, check the air leakage, and do some thermal imaging, and then come up with an energy and ventilation plan so they don't get mold in their attic and they retain as much heat and lower the utility bills.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call very much, Gene. Mike in Madison, you're next. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi there. Let me take you up the microphone here. Yeah, I got a beautiful brown carpet little stoop in my front of the house that is from the 70s that I want to get rid of, and I was just hoping to deck right over that with a composite deck. Any ideas as far as, I don't want to raise it too much, but yet fastening it to the deck. Just wondering about ideas with that.
Okay, so you've got a 1970s house with a stoop in front. Was this a poured in place, or is this one of those precasts that they brought over on a truck and set down?
I wasn't around in the 70s, but I'm guessing it's poured in place.
It's poured in place, okay.
Yeah.
The question is what it has under it for a foundation. Generally, I think I would suggest that you not fasten anything to it, just sort of let it float there under your new deck. So you're probably, the best way to do it, it would be to not attach this new deck or this new entry to your house, but actually to have at least four post holes, and then you may need two more for the bottom of the stairs, so that this is basically an independent structure. And then that old piece of concrete, unless it has already rotated, that is, it's already crooked.
Nope.
Good. Then if we can just leave that sit there. But don't attach to it. Just go around it and leave it buried there behind your nice-looking new structure.
So yeah? the front stoop is sits on a kind of a 90-degree L of the house. The garage kind of sticks out.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't get on four sides of it.
Then you pretty much do have to fasten to the house then.
Okay.
Yeah,
fasten
that's
to the house and not to the stoop, even though the stoop hasn't moved or settled at all.
Unless you can figure out that there's a frost wall underneath that stoop, you could always dig next to it or even get a long rod and do some tapping. And if it goes down 3 or 4 feet, well, then maybe you're just fine. Especially since it hasn't moved.
Sounds good. I'll call Digger's hotline first.
Right. Yes. Good idea.
Good idea. Thanks a lot for calling. Mike, appreciate your call. Bill in Pewaukee has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Bill.
Hello, boys. I have an 18-inch high deck. And my question is, do I need to have a railing on that deck?
You do not. The Wisconsin Uniform Dwelling Code, it's Chapter 321.043, subparagraph 2, to be exact.
Oh, boy.
Well, you know, when you get a news break, you can really be smart, right? So in Wisconsin, unlike much of the rest of the U.S., where 18 inches is the rule, in Wisconsin, 24 inches. But the other thing to remember, that if you have a steps with with more than three risers, that is with 4, 5, 6 risers, that you do need a rail on that. But you sound like you're okay. But, you know, the rest of the country does have 18 inches. And obviously, if one of your guests stepped backwards off 24 inches and fell on their back,
it's
a little rough.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I see a lot of 18-inch decks where people have put on the railings anyway, just because it's a little safer, but
sure,
it isn't required by the Uniform Dwelling Code.
Well, that's good news.
All right. Thank you so much. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And let's go to Bob in Cauldron Falls next. Bob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. Okay, you were speaking of some of the people were speaking of the black mold that will grow on the side of their siding in certain sides of the house.
Yeah.
Okay, and I built my cabin in 94, so it must have been about in 96. I was in my workshop on a Saturday morning, and at that time in Sheboygan and WHBL, they had tips for workshop people. Okay, and they had one on there for Joe Max. It's J-O slash M-A-X. It's sold by Menards. Okay, and you mix it with bleach, and the instructions are on it. Okay, and I mixed mine a little bit stronger. I was getting it on the west side every year because of the trees on that side. Okay, and you spray this on, starting at the bottom, with a hand pump spray. Don't use a power wash. Okay, and you just spray from the bottom up, and don't leave it on more than 10 minutes. You can take a garden hose, and everything will be gone.
Huh.
No scrubbing or anything.
All right. We are using bleach. You know, which is a chemical.
Yeah.
So you know, using bleach isn't for everybody. I think you know Bob's probably pretty handy man if he's listening to the handyman programs. But I'd be a little bit concerned with our average homeowner going out and bleaching their house.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit worrisome. But he is correct. The bleach is going to kill things, and it is certainly going to lighten up the wood as well.
Yeah.
But you know, in the old days, Larry, we talked a lot about using bleach for killing mold in houses, and we really don't do that anymore because of the problems of what we're breathing in when we're working with bleach.
Thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have open lines. Gosh, get you on pretty quickly here. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions and comment. I had an email from Gail in Milwaukee. Can new concrete be layered over existing concrete, assuming the concrete is in good solid shape? If so, what are minimum and maximum depths of new concrete that can be applied?
Well, Gail, yes, it can, but concrete is expensive, and concrete is not very expensive to remove. I'm assuming this is either your driveway or your walkway or maybe both. But when they come in with those bobcats and the breakers, it doesn't take long to get it out. Considering how long good concrete can last, which is 40, 50, 60 years, I would have a tendency to remove the old concrete so I could really take a look at the base underneath and make sure that it wasn't eroded. Because some base over 30, 40 years is really going to change structurally. So considering the investment you're making, I'd suggest that you remove it. But yes, you could put it over the top. But I think talk to your contractors and see what they say. Would it affect the warranty you're going to get from the contractors? If they say yes, well, you want to follow what the contractor says.
Luann asks in an email, if considering replacing shingles with a steel roof, is it okay to leave the shingles on? Or should they be removed before installing the steel roof? If removing shingles, what kind of barrier needs to be applied?
I always suggest that people remove the shingles first, and that's because so many of our roofs have non-green plant growth on them by the time they get old. So they're green and they're gray, and that stuff is acidic. And now we're going to put steel over the top of that. Well, we're acid and metal just as a bad combination. Considering the cost of a steel roof, I would go ahead and strip the roof. Now, what you put underneath for a barrier, if it's 30-pound felt or whatever, is going to depend upon the specifications of the roofing manufacturer.
Yeah.
So, again, you need to go to the manufacturer of this roofing that your roofer is suggesting to you, and you need to download the installation instructions, take a look at what they want down as far as a waterproof membrane. Take a look at the fasteners. If you're in a windy area, take a look at the fasteners for the high wind areas, which are different than the other fasteners. So you're going into a fairly expensive project that should last a very long time. So do your research and don't cut any corners.
Here's an email from Brad. He says, I had a concrete pad, 18 by 18, poured earlier this week in my shed while I was out of town. They finished it somewhat dimpled so that it's non-slip. And I assumed they would be, and I wanted it to be smooth like my garage floor. Is there anything that can be done like a power trowel to get it smoothed out?
There are grinders where you can smooth things out, but you may want to take a look instead at epoxy coatings because you may be able to find a fairly expensive epoxy coating you can apply by yourself that is going to not only smooth out this floor, but that it's going to make it very easy for you to clean up. I'm assuming you're probably doing some woodworking, and it's a pretty good-sized shed here.
Yeah.
So you've probably got some projects. So take a look at the epoxy coatings first and see if you can do that without hiring somebody to come in with a grinder and do it yourself. I think that's going to be the low-cost alternative.
Sherry in Wausau up next. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 1935 Tudor-style home with a stone foundation. It's been very well maintained. But in the basement, although I have a sump pump along this wall, I have some black on the wall where water has gotten in. I've never had standing water in my basement, but if we have a lot of rain, it will get wet. And there's black there, and I don't know if it's mold or mildew, and I need to know how concerned I need to be.
Well, again, if I'm remembering the EPA correctly, if it's under 3 square feet, it's something you can take care of yourself. It may be algae. So what
you
I would say...
it's black?
Yes. Yeah,
oh.
You can get black, dark blue, all kinds of things. The thing is, you have a stone foundation, and your stone foundation has a lot of lime in it. And a lot of the molds really don't much care for that.
Oh.
So it's entirely possible what you have there is no problem at all. What we suggest nowadays is take a good solution of Dawn dish soap and water and a beaver brush, you know, a good scrub brush, scrub it off. My guess is that most of it's probably going to come off. It'll gradually come back, and 5 years from now, you can scrub it again.
Do I need to wear a mask?
I think it's always a good idea to go ahead and wear a face mask. It's better to actually wear a respirator with the right. You know, because, you know, we're dealing with dust and dirt and dust mites, and there might be a little mouse dropping or something down there while you're scrubbing. So you're right. It's a good idea to make sure you protect your lungs. But it sounds like you've got quite a minor problem.
Oh, good.
And I think the Dawn dish soap, which is that's what has replaced bleach, is Dawn dish soap.
Wonderful. Okay, well, thank you so much for your help.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Phil in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Phil.
Hey, I just want to touch base on mold in people's attics. And I know there's a lot of people that are listening that probably think they don't have it. Although, dating back to houses that were built in the 70s, early 80s, when bathroom exhaust fans were vented in the attic and they were just left to hang dry, obviously that's a lot of concern for moisture. And that's where mold does happen. But also, people that power wash their houses, they think they're doing themselves a favor by, you know, they power wash the siding and they just go after those soffit pans. Even if the house is built after that, it's a newer house, they're trying to clean the grime off those soffit pans. Water can still get through those soffit pans of the house. So, I guess what I'm trying to say is that it's one of those things that people don't think about, is that you're forcing water into a situation where it doesn't need to be forced. And do I have an answer how to clean your soffit pans easier? No, but keep that in mind when you're power washing your house, that you're spraying up at those pans, and water can have a tendency to get in your attic and obviously form mold. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah.
Right. You're quite right, Phil. We need to remember that in Wisconsin, not only do our bathroom fans have to be airtight, but they have to be insulated so we get condensation in them. And in the summer, which is when we're out power washing our houses, we've got air being drawn into the soffits because the attic is hot and it's going out through the roof vents. So if we've got a water mist up there, that water vapor is going to be pulled right up into the attic, Larry. So Phil's point is well taken.
Yeah. Thank you, Phil. Appreciate it. Rosemary in Madison, your turn now. Hi, Rosemary.
I have a cedar shake roof, which is about 14 years old, and the cedar shakes are curling up. There are quite a few cedar shake roofs in my neighborhood, and they don't have that problem. I have tried to contact the roofer, and he hasn't called back so far. Could the reason be that I have a poorer quality cedar shake than the other roofs? I mean, what would be the reason?
We find about 90% of the cedar roofs put on in Wisconsin are put on wrong. And again, this is Larry. We keep telling people you need to have the installation instructions because most times when you hand them to the contractor, they've never seen them. The Redwood and Cedar Bureau has complete instructions, or almost complete instructions, I add a few things to them, for the installation of cedar shingles. And I'm sorry, is it Rosemary? Rosemary. You can go online to the Cedar Bureau. Just type in Google Cedar Bureau Shingles or Cedar Bureau Shingles, and you will get the installation manual. Now, you're not supposed to have any cedar shingles on your roof that are wider than 8 inches. How they're gapped is usually done wrong in Madison. They have to be nailed. They can't be stapled. If they're stapled in the middle, they tend to curl. So there's a lot of things that may have been done wrong on your roof. Some of your other neighbors may be a little bit luckier. The other thing that we see is shingles with knots, shingles that aren't vertical grain. If they use shingles that are not vertical grain, they are all going to cup because they've got face grain. So they've got surface tensions in them. So there may be a whole number of things that that may have gone wrong, but start with the Cedar Shingle Bureau. If you need some further information, I have an additional 3 or 4 pages of specifications that I've written for cedar roofs. You can email me at frei@chorus, like a group of singers, chorus.net, and I'd be happy to share those things with you.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Tom in Tomahawk, do you have a quick question for us?
Yes, thanks for taking my call. We have a deck it's a raised deck attached to the front of our cabin at our lake, and the foundation has developed cracks along the each side. I believe they were there when we bought the cabin 4 years ago, and I'm wondering if I should have some means of disconnecting the deck from the foundation and supporting it in some other means. There's about 3 foot of clearance, so it'd make it a bit difficult to get under there and do it. But the foundation is an older foundation, probably from the late 40s, 50s. It was poured. It's a poured foundation, and there's stringers that the cabin and the three-season porch sit on that support the house.
Right. What I'm going to suggest you do, Tom, is get some professional help up there. What I suggest you do is go to American Society Home Inspectors, ASHI.org. Look for a home inspector in your area. You may find that Mr. Smith or whoever it is up there actually has a profile, and he may be one of these guys who's also deck certified. It's entirely possible that the cracks in your concrete are just old curing cracks and that the deck has nothing to do with it. It may be possible that they're moving slightly and they should be epoxy sealed. You have a whole bunch of maybes up there. So I would suggest having a home inspector come in and take a look. Most of them are pretty knowledgeable about this. And again, the people who have joined the professional associations tend to be a little bit more professional than the ones who haven't. So I would start that way, and so you can actually get some on-site advice.
Very good. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And here we are. Here comes the music. Must mean we're out of time. John, thank you so much. You're back on August 10th, and we'll do this all over again. Thanks again for being with us.
Sounds great, Larry. Look forward to seeing you in August.
John Freiberger of Freiberger Construction Consulting of Fitchburg, our guest today, and he will be back August 10th, and we will do this all over again. Tomorrow it's Garden Talk. Liz Freemuth from the Garden Ho will be with us. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.